Life Behind the Rainbow was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland from the television licence fee. No one can deny that there has been an extraordinary transformation in the status of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people in Ireland over the last two decades. It was just 22 years ago in 1993 that law reform on the basis of equality decriminalised gay people. In 2010, lesbian and gay relationships were recognised through civil partnerships, which have some, but not all, of the legal rights and entitlements of civil marriage. 2015 is set to be a pivotal year in Irish legislation. Section 37 of the Equality Legislation in Ireland, which ensures that people cannot be discriminated against in employment, is to be removed in 2015. This will remove the stress from workers in religious-run schools and hospitals, where there is an ability to sack staff for being gay, divorced, or unmarried parents. The marriage equality referendum, which, if passed by the Irish people, will ensure that lesbian and gay people have full and equal citizenship and status in the Irish Constitution. It has been described as a once-in-a-lifetime moment. Jonathan Neville is from Youghal. He has an extraordinary story. I asked him to tell me when he realised he was gay.
At a very early age, I would say 10. Because I go back to when I was in primary school. I just knew then that I wanted to hang around with certain boys in my class. I know, I was only 10, so at that time I didn't realise. But I was kind of aware this is something different. Why do I want to spend more time with these people? It's very much an innocence because I hadn't a clue about anything back then. And then around 11, I had a rude awakening to the facts of life by some friends, as happens. And I knew then that it didn't appeal to me, you know, it just doesn't make any sense at all. It was very difficult for me. I didn't know what was going on. When I was 12, I went to boarding school for a year, and that was a complete shock to the system because, you know, I knew again I was different, but you had to be tough in that school because when all these boys all together, there's kind of a tough manly thing going on, playing sports and so on. So at that age, I knew I had to hide it. No one told me to. I just knew I was different and I ensured that no one would know about me and I kept that facade up for a very long time.
That must have been very difficult.
At the time, initially no, but over the years it really took its toll on me, yeah, very much so. All my teens, all my 20s, I kept it hidden. I did kind of mention to my parents in my mid-20s, but they kind of knew anyway. Parents generally always know, I feel. It was very difficult and it really, really affected my confidence. When I first learned the word gay, I thought it was, you know, you all remember Are You Being Served and Mr. Humphreys, that was gay was being all about. But I had no interest in being very, I didn't know the word then, camp. Only when we moved to England in the 80s, it's like 83 to 85, I saw a programme on Channel 4. I snuck up late one night to watch it. Parents didn't know at the time. I was only 14. And there was a documentary about gay people in England at that time, because there was nothing in Ireland, as you know, back then. I just saw a brief snippet where one guy said, like, well, gay men are straight acting as well, in the sense that they're not camp feminine people. That was a revelation for a 14-year-old then, because it kind of made sense. Being gay doesn't necessarily mean I have to run around being the flaming queen with handbags. Now, they're part of the gay community, and I totally accept them. I have no problem with them. But there was this persona or this, you know, perception that that was gay was all about, you see.
What was then your experience of coming out?
When I was innocent and 17, 18, I went to Maynooth. I trained for a few years for the priesthood in the Clyne Diocese. So a lot of people in Youghal probably still think I may have done that or finished that, but no, I only lasted 2.5 years. I left abruptly because it was the wrong place for a person struggling with their sexuality to be honest with you. Looking back at it now, there was all these anti-messages being preached every now and then, and which didn't help. Totally didn't help my confidence. And at the age of 19, I decided that was it. I decided to end my life. I tried to, but it wasn't really a serious attempt. But I just couldn't. I didn't want to be different anymore. Here I was, 19, in Maynooth, supposedly trained to be a priest. And I expected support from my peers up there, but there was no support, you know. There was a cold front. That was a shock. So I left and I came out for a few years. So I was a bit lost. I was a bit depressed, but then again, when you try to kill yourself, it's natural that you would be suffering from those symptoms, you know. The support I got then was good in a sense, but I never really addressed the real reason because I had to keep it in.
I tried to get Jonathan to make me understand why he considered suicide at the age of 19. His answer was heartbreaking.
Hating myself because I did not want to be different. You know, I really wanted to be like everyone else, and but the perception of everyone else, and you know, it's a shock. Because it is also the idea that you are the only one in the world, and I very much had that instilled in me at that age. Because come from a small town, y'all, you think even more so that you're the only one in the world. But when I look back in hindsight, I wasn't. But if I'd known then, it would have made life much easier. You know, if I like nowadays, people have Facebook and SMS messages, and but. There was nothing back then.
Jonathan set up GayCork.com in 2002. It promised to break the mould and emerged largely because of the needs of Cork's gay community were not being met by existing websites.
At the time, I was going, there's no websites. No anyone in Ireland to come together. There was something in Dublin, but there wasn't really much happening there. There was nothing for Cork. So I bought the domain GayCork.com, and I remember buying the domain. I was absolutely terrified. Because my name would be registered in this domain, you know. And I remember emailing the company that hosts the website and asking, would it be okay? Just how naive I was back then, you know. So the website grew organically. Going back to the heyday, there was lots of people from all ages. We had regular meetups. And I remember in the early days, too, the website was, it's so funny to look back now, the Sunday World didn't expose on the website and they call us a sordid gay sex website. I always remember that stupid headline.
To date, it has endeavoured to be a genuinely useful website, with a serious attempt to answer all questions posed by its users, and as a resource for marginalised groups, including bisexuals, transsexuals and the closeted. I asked Jonathan if he thought the website had achieved this.
I think by the vast amount of people I know through the website, and again, the many relationships I can go on to describe with various different people, people have come up to me and thanked me. Again, it doesn't happen these much these days, but I was taken aback by it because it never occurred to me initially that the effect of this website would have.
The Children and Family Relationships Bill is also set for 2015, and this legislation includes more than 170 sections and will extend guardianship, custody and adoption rights to different types of families, including unmarried fathers, lesbian and gay-headed families.
I have an 8.5-year-old son. I made friends in Milan, two lesbians. So at the time, they were trying for children, and it just occurred to me, why not just offer, you know, I'd like to help out here. So I said to my family first, I would, you know, I'm very close to my family, and they were delighted with the idea. So we went for it. His mothers are his main parents, really, because there's no way I could possibly be a full-time parent because I'm in Cork, there in Milan. He knows me as his father. His name is Fionn. His birth mother, ironically, is Irish. And his other mother is Italian. So he speaks two languages. It's a joy to see him because I never expected to have children because I'd given up on that a long time ago.
Fionn Murray grew up in Cork with two mothers. He gave me his view on the different types of families.
Growing up, I would always say my parents were my parents occasionally. Like a new friend would say, you've got two mums. I'd be more like, yeah, they're my parents. Like, if you've got a mother and father, they're just your parents. Gender doesn't exist as a child as such. You know, there's boys and girls, and besides that means nothing. What makes them different? They're both very strict on education and academics. They're both highly, highly educated people. Compared to myself, I've never been to college. That's because it never called out to me, and they were always fine with that. My parents, if what separated them from a lot of other parents, I would say, is that they taught me never to look at someone differently based on their outward appearance or their religion, based on who they are. Sometimes a bad person is just a bad person, and sometimes people are nice, no matter where they're from. And that was the key thing that I really got from my parents, more than I'd say some others.
Link, or Lesbians in Cork, is a pretty unique place. It has been around for over 20 years and is the only community development organisation working exclusively with lesbian and bisexual women. Kate Moynihan speaks to me about one of the campaigns to raise awareness on how health practitioners and other state organisations refer to people in the LGB community.
Well, I suppose one of the things, and it's very common, is that it's presumed that people are heterosexual. That they're straight. And we would try and say to anybody, any sort of professional that's dealing with clients, with dealing with people, that really don't be presuming that, because you automatically exclude us. Rather than asking a woman about her boyfriend or her husband, that you would ask her about her partner. And you open up the conversation for people to say, she, my partner, you know, in that way, that it just, it eases it up. We're sort of doing new ones for that, that they won't be specific for healthcare practitioners. There's similar questions that can be used, but that would be for all state organisations, or all organisations, really. If it's a family centre, trying to make these places, I suppose, accessible and a positive experience for lesbian and bisexual women.
LINC promotes a positive health programme which promotes mental, emotional and sexual health awareness and understanding for lesbian and bisexual women. Kate shares some of the history with me.
LINC as an organisation and as a name is here since 1999. But there has been activism and women supporting women for going way back. Initially, it would have been in the early days of the Key Co-op, where there was a women's space there, a small little room up at the top of the building, but it was a place for activism and for women who were interested in other women who were feminists as well, and women who were lesbian or bisexual. They would have come together and organised different things. So then over the years, that has always been there. It's like, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants. It's just been passed down, and the women, you know, have influenced other women coming forward and younger women coming up along. And then a few women got together to try and source some bit of funding to try and make things a bit more stable, I suppose, really, and concrete. They were successful with that. And then, you know, move from different premises to our location here. And here, we're here since 1999. We always want to acknowledge those women who were involved back then when things weren't necessarily positive for them. They were the ones who really made it possible to have LINC. We are the only lesbian, bisexual women's centre in the Republic of Ireland. We've always found a need for just the one organisation.
It also runs a peer support group, counselling and social activities, as well as engaging with various groups in the community, such as the Young Women Group, Lesbian Parents Group and the Older Lesbian Group.
People are not alone, and sometimes people think they are, that they're the only person. They're the only mother, they're the only married woman, they're the only person living in a particular village. In rural areas, of course, it can be very difficult getting to know people. So yeah, I'd really encourage any woman out there who's wondering, who's looking for support, who's wondering whether they're lesbian, bisexual, make contact. We are that resource for people.
Last year, I applied for a job in the public sector. I was astonished to find that during a questionnaire to assess the suitability of my personality to the job I was applying for, one question asked me about my sexual orientation. It asked me, was I A, heterosexual, B, homosexual, or C, bisexual? In an act of defiance, I ticked all the boxes. Needless to say, I didn't get the job. But on a more serious note, I was completely baffled as to why this was in any way relevant to how suitable I was as a candidate, or how it would determine if I would be good at the job I was applying for. The LGBT community is more prominent now, but it has always been here. In Ireland in 2015, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Labour and Sinn Féin all have LGBT groups within their political parties. There is an LGBT group in the Irish National Teachers Organisation, and G-Force, a group on An Garda Síochána that supports LGBT Gardaí. For the first time in its history, the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation held a conference in Dublin where gay rights were on the agenda. The Students' Union of Ireland have an active LGBT society in almost every college in Ireland. The Other Place opened its doors in Cork in 1991. It took its name from a black-humoured nod to the colloquial name given to Our Lady's Hospital, where many of the LGBT community would go to deal with issues relating to their sexuality. Arthur Leahy was the man tasked with getting The Other Place up and running, and its origins lay with the Key Co-op. The Key Co-op in Cork was founded in 1982 as a radical, alternative community project by a collective effort of feminist, lesbian and gay, environmental and other alternative groups and individuals. Throughout the 1980s, it provided a local base for the politics of the new social movements of that period. The current manager of The Other Place, Clive Davis, has developed many different community groups. Some include the Choral Confusion Choir and Out for Dinner, a group who helps people who are not out yet. I met Clive in the Bustling Cafe and he told me about how The Other Place has helped people over the years.
So The Other Place really is a resource centre for the LGBT community. It's a place for the LGBT community to go, feel at home, they can come out, they can go through a process, they can join a group. A safe space, really. I mean, community to me is about building people together and allowing them to grow and allowing them to succeed in what they want to do, you know. So sometimes the media and things kind of get frustrated with is this whole coming out, you know, let's come out. So suddenly you have this vision of these seven gay people running through a stream, coming out, bursting out into the open. And in fact, that's not what it's about at all. It's about coming out to yourself. And, you know, I suppose I can only come from my own process, and I think everyone does the same thing. If you can come out to yourself, it doesn't matter who says something to you on a Tuesday morning on Patrick Street. It doesn't matter who says something to you on the main street in some rural town. If you're okay with it, then you can battle everything. You know, and that is, to me, what coming out is about. So The Other Place, to me, harnesses that and allows people to come out at their own time.
Gay Project is an organisation which aims to provide a quality service to LGBT people and their families. It evolved from political and social initiatives and embraces community development principles. It started life in the 1970s in Pope's Quay under the guise of the Cork Naturalist Club. Oftentimes, it seems that LGBT people living in rural Ireland move to urban centres as they feel there are little or no services provided for them. Dave Roach points out how this changes the fabric of rural Ireland.
I did enjoy living in the city when I was younger. I also realise now, looking back, that it probably saved me. I'm not sure it would have been as easy growing up in small North Cork, whereas coming to the city, doors opened that wouldn't have been available to me when I was younger. The reality is that the population, gay populations, have always had a history, a sad history of migration. When I was younger, it would have been London or Amsterdam or America. And increasingly people feel that they need to come to Cork or Dublin, Waterford. The sadness for me in that, I suppose, is that it really denudes rural communities of sort of gay role models. So younger people growing up only see, you know, this heterosexist model that I grew up with, whereas communities where there is an out and positive gay community are much more likely to be diverse, interesting, and much more likely to attract the kind of people you'd want living in your area. When you're at a space in your life where you can, you know, take the little negativity you're going to get, because there will be little bits of negativity, the vast majority of people actually have busy lives and are not really interested in what I do in my private life. And my experience of going back to the country, and I'm very active in my locality, I'm involved in fundraising and charities, you know, we do a lot of that type of stuff. And when you're in a space where you can do that, you'll have a very positive experience. That's not to encourage anybody to come out in the morning, you know, that's not our job at all. But the reality is that often the negativity that gay people face is often in their own heads. We imagine negativity more than we'll actually get. You know, I think it's a kind of a self-protection thing that we've evolved. But the reality is that if you're in a space where you can be positive about yourself, you'll usually find that most people respond positively.
Being the parent of someone who is in the LGBT community can oftentimes be very difficult. This was no different for Dave and his family.
And, you know, your mum and dad, you said they were very supportive, but were they too sort of at a loss for parents and there's no one to talk to?
No, I mean, of course, it didn't come with a book or, you know, there was no guidelines. I was the first in their circle of friends to come out. But considering, like, the basic parenting skills don't change. They're still the basic parenting skills. Some parents can make that rush of trying to treat you with kid gloves or think you're special in some way, in inverted commas. And they might be walking in eggshells around you a bit. They might even try to become your friend as opposed to your parent, because they're scrabbling for a relationship. Because you have to redefine the relationship. You know, that David they had imagined and planned for suddenly told them that he was somebody else completely. I can't imagine. I mean, I've discussed it with Mum, and I'm very active in the parent support group here in Cork. I mean, I started that about 12 years ago now, I suppose. For a mother and father to, especially a mother, I think, to realise that she didn't know her 14-year-old son, it's a very difficult space. I should have known. Then some parents fall into the trap of blame. You overmildly coddled him, you were too strict, you weren't always there. You know, they're looking for a cause. There is no cause. But a lot of parents spend a lot of time looking for that. Considering there was absolutely no guidelines and no supports whatsoever for parents back then, I think my mum and dad did an amazing job by simply relying on their basic parenting skills, because that doesn't change.
I mean, when you were younger, was there anything in the way of guidance or help for a young man?
Absolutely nothing. You must remember that it was still illegal in this country. I'm going back to, I suppose, the late 70s. You know, that was an Ireland where you had the marriage bar, you know, you had no women's rights, you had certainly no gay rights. It wasn't even being discussed. There was probably beginnings, you know, that upper class, middle class conversation was beginning to happen. I'm sure at a few dinner parties around gay rights, but that was so far removed from my experience. So there was absolutely nothing. There was no frame of references at all. And when I did begin exploring, about gay life in Cork, most of it was quite seedy. It was underground. It was kind of illegal. It was in, you know, public spaces. It was in dirty bars. You know, it was a very negative place to be. It's not like now. You know, we have a variety of bars. We have a variety of options. You have to have an awareness around the amount of damage that does to one as well, because, you know, you internalise that as your early experiences, especially when you begin exploring the sexual side of your sexuality, because, like, I'm not my sex life. My sexuality and my sex life are separate. They inform each other, but I can't be defined by my sexual activities. So when you internalise that kind of early negativity, you do damage yourself. It does affect your mental health. So you have to have an awareness around that. And I suppose increasingly the work of the project is to skip that stage so that you don't have to go through that negative stuff, I suppose.
I asked Dave to tell me a little bit about the organisation.
In its current format, the Cork Gay Community Development Project Limited goes back to 2000, when we got some funding from the state to set up a social enterprise company. So really, I suppose, my drive has always been to challenge people to engage with themselves and to realise that the structures are changing, and that's largely down to some of the early work that was done. The structure changes have been huge in Ireland in 20 years. What's been slower is the uptake, for want of a better word, amongst younger and not so young LGBT people in Ireland who still live in, you know, slight fear, slight trepidation. And that's the reality. I mean, we deal with that on a daily basis, whether it's through the helplines, calls to the office or support groups. Gay men and women have been damaged by the way Ireland was, and that damage is slower to change than the law.
Do you think as well it's about personal responsibility to a certain extent?
I do think that there is a huge personal responsibility in this, of course. But there are social determinants, as in all issues around health or well-being. It would have been impossible for anybody to be entirely responsible for how they felt about themselves, given the state we're emerging from. Until very recently, Ireland was a white, heterosexist, agrarian community. Some people look back at that with rose-tinted glasses, but if you scratch the surface, the experience of women, single mothers, gay people, people living in poverty, I'm talking about financial poverty because there are other forms of poverty, was not so great. You know, it was fine if you were middle-class, white and agrarian, but that wasn't the experience of everybody.
The Cork Pride Festival is a very important date in the social calendar for the LGBT community. Pride is historically much more than just a celebration. It is rooted in the gay civil rights movement. In 1969, the Stonewall riots occurred in New York following a police raid at the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village. This is widely considered to constitute the single most important event leading to the gay liberation movement and the modern fight for LGBT rights in the USA. Cork Pride's mission is to celebrate the diverse culture of Cork's LGBT community and has grown from strength to strength. The 2015 theme is Proud to Be. Some of the participants in this programme tell me how much Cork Pride means to them. We start with Kate Moynihan.
It's just people coming together and celebrating. In one way, it's celebration of who we are and I think where we've come from as well. I love it. I think it also has, it's sort of like we're here and we're proud and, you know, we're not going anywhere. A lot of it is about visibility. It's for the person on the side of the street who is afraid to join that march. who's walking along with her sister or her mother, who she hasn't been able to come out to, who's afraid, who's terrified of coming out. You know, the more visibility that's there, it makes it, again, accessible for people. And I hope there will always be Pride parades.
Jonathan Neville gives me his view on Cork Pride.
The first Pride's in Cork, there was no parade. So it was very much a muted affair. But the first year we had a parade, I very much was in the forefront, that I grabbed the flag, walking in the front, marching through Cork for the first time ever. And that was everyone was just elated that day, because it was the first ever public Pride parade in Cork. And the excitement of it, and oh my, it was nerve-wracking, but we did it anyway, you know, holding that flag, walking around the city centre. I was involved in the committee in various different stages, different years. I involved in the printing the brochure and the website and so on. But I find as I get older, it's not as important to me, because being gay is just part of what I am. What's far more important is just being happy.
Pride means to me to be able to stand up for who you are in front of whoever is in front of you and be yourself. Be that loving, caring, adorable, funny, smiley person who is proud to stand next to your friends, next to your family, and even more importantly, they're more proud to stand next to you. It's one of the happiest days of the year for me. I just adore it. And to look at the crowds and the people and the genuine smiles around the place. And if you strip back the clothes, the boas, the paints, the flags, the music, you strip all that back just to stand and look at the people that are watching and clapping and cheering is just amazing. The support, and it helps you to stay strong, and it helps you to believe that everything will be as it should be in time to come, like.
Who we are is like, we're the people who get up in the morning, go to work, go to college, dress the children, get them to schools, do the school runs, take them to sports, take them to whatever extracurricular activities. You know, we pay our taxes, we go to the movies, and basically just trying to live our lives same way as everybody else. We have the same concerns, we have the mortgages, we have the bills, and they're the things that take up our time and absorb our minds, and getting to Friday and having the weekend off. All those things that have to be done. And that's who we are. You know, we're no different than anybody else in how we live and try to get through life.
I asked each of the participants to tell me their hopes and dreams for the future. Unsurprisingly, there was no major revelations. Here's what Jonathan Neville had to say.
My hopes and dreams is that, what gets me about the everyone being accepting, which is fantastic, there's a lot of people who have not come out, who live in terror still. And there, my hopes is to reach everyone, to let them know you're not alone. And it's not so bad when you come out. But you don't have to come out, but coming out is actually, it's a huge relief. It's a weight off your shoulders. Like, I know people in marriages and they're gay. And another area that's not really explored much is the fact that people are bisexual. They're both. Which confuses people a lot, you know. How can you like both? But it happens.
And I suppose for your son to grow up in a world where, you know, it's just a family is family.
I have a gay dad, so what? You know, that's the way my mother has, my mothers are going out with each other. You know, so what? Like, you know.
But the last word is for Sandra Murphy.
Oh, to find a girl, settle down. Should I break into song? just to be happy, just to be content. Would love to meet a girl, would love to settle down. I'm not going to let it dictate my life if I don't. Be surrounded by people that I love and, you know, live life to the full. Life's too short. Love is love. Get out there. Have a ball.
Making this programme has given me the opportunity to meet some wonderful people. I would like to thank them for speaking to me so candidly about their lives. My sincere gratitude to those who made this documentary possible. Life Behind the Rainbow was produced and presented by Orla Reardon and edited by Sean Healy. This programme is a Community Radio Youghal production. If you have been affected by any of the issues in this programme, you can call the National LGBT Helpline on 1890 929 539.